Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley, along with my brother Bill Ackerley. Good morning, Bill. Aubrey Romero, our great guest from the world of public relations and community events. And wonderful. Good to see you, Aubrey. We're going to talk about you because Jeremy and I are going to talk about what happened last night. Our guest this morning is Jeremy Smith. He is with Central Supply, but also Benjamin Supply Company here in Tucson. And last night, we celebrated the 75th anniversary of Benjamin Supply Company. Good morning to you, Jeremy.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
What a great event you had last night. That was just amazing.
I would like to think so, mostly because of Aubrey, I will say. I just kind of show up and I get to take, some credit for it. But in reality, I didn't do very much for it.
Yes, you did. You were the greeter. You were the greeter. And that beautiful champagne lady that was standing on she was 14 feet tall and she had 300 champagne glasses around her. That was amazing.
That was very cool.
Food was delicious. The music was good.
Yeah.
Sixto Molina and I, who would normally be here on a Friday, he's out in therapy this morning. He has therapy twice a week, and tomorrow, he usually goes Thursday, but he went to golf today, so he calls it therapy. Which keeps him sane. We had a great time. Went into the parking lot, we're leaving, and your brother came out. We talked to him for...
It's a family business.
We talked to him for about 15, 20 minutes. That was really fun. And then your niece came out, who was sitting just in that seat about 3-4 weeks ago when she came in.
She's a Pommy at the university.
She is a Pommy, and she's awesome. She's incredible. So congratulations on the 75th anniversary of Benjamin Supply Company. You and I have not been around long enough to know that when it was created, but you and your family now own the company. And tell us a little bit about Benjamin Supply Company and what makes it unique here in Tucson.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it unique because there's not that many businesses that have lasted 75 years. Like, that was what was so exciting about our event last night, is that you were just like, this is not something you get to celebrate very often.
Right.
So that was really amazing. And it's crazy because what we've really learned, and Aubrey's actually done a lot of the research on the company, you know, to kind of find out where it all came from. It actually started... It's older than 75 years, but the Berman family really arrived from New York City in 1945, and then 1950 is when they took ownership of it from the original Benjamin Anton, because there hasn't been a Benjamin involved in it in 75 years.
75 years, right.
Which is kind of crazy, right?
And so he was just more of a kind of a fixture plumbing kind of a store, a small little retailer, and it's really changed what it is now.
But yeah, I mean, well, they did a lot of things back in the day. I mean, they
more
sold
like a mercantile, yeah.
Exactly. They sold hardware, they sold appliances, they sold, you know, just anything you would kind of need for your house. Because, again, the town
wasn't that big.
We're
in the 40s,
There's
40,000 people in the area.
Yeah, you did what you had to do to try to make your business go. So it was a lot of things. And then as time went on, it evolved into more focusing on the plumbing part of things,
right?
Plumbing and hardware. And then what they're really, really famous for and what Benjamin is known for now is their decorative showroom.
Yes.
And so 1977 is when the Berman family, which would have been Marty Berman and his wife Ruth, really started this decorative thing. Because And it really was.
And again, nobody really had. They're the only place in town.
Not only in town, in Arizona.
Right.
Like, it didn't exist. And so my family actually is from Mesa, and my dad is a plumber. And we would buy, my grandfather would buy decorative products from Benjamin Supply because they were the place in Arizona you would get for something nice. Otherwise, it was just like whatever your plumber had on his truck is what you would, you know, install into your house. So 1977 is when they opened the decorative bath shop, if you will. And it was at 210 East Broadway.
Right. I think that's where the old Chamber of Commerce had their office for about 5 years. I think they took over that
spot.
Oh,
really? Well, yeah. Most recently was the Thunder Canyon Brewery. And now it's the Brick Box Brewery in that space.
It's in that same block there. Yeah. That's great. And then you moved, how long ago did they move over to the current space?
So they bought the building in...
That was a warehouse and transfer building, right?
Exactly. The warehouse and transfer building, it was 1990, and they used it as their warehouse. And so you would buy something on Broadway and then you'd have to drive over there and someone would drive with you and meet you sometimes. I mean, like, it was a whole operation. And then in 2000 is when they fully moved into What we know as Benjamin Supply today. So 25 years ago.
When you drive by it, as I do, I don't go for plumbing things very often, but when you drive by it, you don't realize how big it is.
It's a huge complex.
Yeah.
Yes. I think it's 8 buildings overall that have all kind of like grown together at the same time. Like,
and over on the north, the south side there, there's the warehouse, and that's huge just in and of itself. It's huge.
Yeah.
But the showroom is humongous.
It is. It's the largest showroom in the state of Arizona.
Right.
It's just massive. Yeah. And so interesting and cool. The original building is on the corner. It's the 4-story building with the big, beautiful mural. And that was, that was done in 1918. It was actually opened the same year and done by the same architect as the Hotel Congress, which I think is very cool.
Very cool.
And then in 1936, they needed to expand, so they opened what we kind of now know as the showroom, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And that was done by Jostler, which is known as a residential architect mostly, right. But this was a commercial building that he did, and it is absolutely beautiful. So
great. We're talking with Jeremy Smith. He and his family own Benjamin Supply Company, and last night was a wonderful gala to celebrate 75 years, a huge milestone. Now, as we say, for any business to last that long is pretty amazing. And it's interesting how when we were there, Sixto Molina and I were there, and it was amazing how many people who are in that industry of design and construction and commercial, but also custom homes and those kind of thing. We met quite a few people that are, what a burgeoning industry. It's amazing how many people were in that showroom from all walks of life. But
I think we had over 300 people, which was pretty awesome. And what's amazing about that, though, is like so many of those people have been shopping at Benjamin for a really, really long time, like generationally speaking.
Right.
Like, you know, I met a younger guy last night that I was talking to him, and he was like, you know, oh, my dad's been buying here for, you know, 40 years, and I just started with my dad. And so, like, I'm working on his business. And I love those stories because that's my story. That's my family's story.
Right.
And it unfortunately feels like a rarer story, where so often, you know, people are like, oh, whatever my mom and dad did, I want to totally do something different.
Right.
It's like, no, they've already done all of this like interesting work. You can learn from them and join this family business and see what you can add to it.
I had that same experience. I was talking to Johnny Luciano and some guys, and all of them had parents or grandparents who had shopped at Benjamin Supply. They're in the trades now.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
And they're still coming and doing the same thing. And it's amazing the stories that were being told about how they've interacted with Benjamin Supply over 75 years.
Oh, my
gosh.
It's
amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, the prior owner, the family, was iconic. I mean, for 72 years, they owned the business. Mm-hmm. And so it was really, the father, unfortunately, died fairly young,
right.
In the 80s. And so it really is what kind of pushed Mark into the business. So Mark Berman, he was, you know, just an icon of not only Tucson, I believe, but also the actual decorative plumbing industry. Like,
right.
You know, he was known nationwide, and his family.
And his mom was involved.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. She wasn't just involved.
Yeah.
She was the business.
She
like,
was.
I think actually Mark gets a lot of credit because, again, in the plumbing industry, you know, there's not a lot of women. There haven't been. That's changing, luckily, but for a long time. So I don't think she got the credit that she was definitely due for being the powerhouse that she was.
Yeah.
That really, like, so much of the old marketing that we've seen,
she
was responsible for. So many of the lines, and so much of the discipline that was Benjamin Supply brought from Ruth Berman.
What was interesting is Sixto was on his way, and so I stood out there on the front, which is beautiful, that front patio, and trains came by, and that was kind of cool. But there was still even, I don't know what time the warehouse closes, but there were about 6, 8, 10 trucks that came in, hopped in, ran in, and got their stuff, and took off. While the party was getting set up, they were still working on plumbing projects. I don't know what time you guys closed, but they had supplies going out the door.
We closed at 4:30, so our party started at 4:30, so they were there until at least 4:30. No, and oftentimes we stay later than that.
I mean,
No, we have over, you know, typically on average, we have 50 customers a day on that back counter that are coming through there. So
and they're everything from a single a homeowner kind of or construction person that's doing one custom home to a large.
Yeah, or even just someone who like, you know, needs a part for something. Like right. That's what has really, you know, that's what's kind of cool about
unique
Benjamin.
Parts, right?
Yeah, is that like, you know, the intention, you know, now we're in such a throwaway culture, but before that, it really was like, you know, you would buy your faucet and there was no reason you couldn't have your faucet for a lifetime.
Right.
As long as you maintained it. I mean, water is coming through it and our water can be very hard and, right. you know, especially if you don't have a good filtration on it. But, you know, so you could come in, not only buy a faucet, but then go to the back counter and they right. will fix your faucet as time goes on and help you do that. So yeah, so it's retail customers, but also yes, the trade, you know, commercial work.
And you think about all the body of homes and all the historical homes that do have historical plumbing in mm-hmm. them. There's only one place they can go to find anything that would remotely fix what they need.
100%. Yeah. Well, that's the thing that's amazing about Benjamin is that so many of the people that work there have really been there a very long time.
Right.
And so it's kind of fun to...
They bring in the faucet, they stick it on the counter and say, can you... And I'll be right back. I know exactly where that is. And they go back and get...
100%.
Yeah, they know exactly what they're looking at. Yeah.
You have no idea. So much so that my sister had a faucet that her handle had fallen off and it was in her shower. And I was like, you know, that's been discontinued. It was discontinued maybe 15 years ago. Like, right. I don't know. We're going to maybe have to pull out that valve and, you know, which is a very expensive project to do. And so I got with one of the guys at Benjamin. I was like, by any chance, they went up to the third floor of that tower
right.
and found an old handle that had been there forever. I'm like, how did you remember
years.
This
yeah.
was even here? Yeah. It's amazing.
That's great. We're talking with Jeremy Smith. He and his family owned Benjamin Supply Company. We're with Aubrey Romero, who is the person who threw a fantastic party last night celebrating yes. the 75th anniversary of Benjamin Supply Company. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about Benjamin Supply and the future and what the next 75 years looks like. You're listening to The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice, where we talk about success on Friday mornings. And then in the 8 o'clock hour, we talk about wonder, the good things going on at the University of Arizona. And speaking of success, Benjamin Supply Company has been in Tucson for 75 years plus, a few years before that, before it became Benjamin Supply Company. And last night, we had a fantastic party to celebrate the 75th anniversary of Benjamin Supply Company. And got to talk to Jeremy's brother, which is so your family, Jeremy Smith, is the one of the family members that owns it from Central Arizona Supply. Tell us a little bit about the family and your dad and grandpa and Central Arizona Supply and how you got to become the owners of Benjamin Supply.
Yeah, my family's from a very small Midwest town in Western Illinois and basically kind of did what Benjamin has been doing here for a long time, which is you did a little bit of everything. They built houses, they were plumbers, they sold appliances, they sold furniture, all the things. And one brother moved to Mesa and he basically called his brother and was like, get out of that little town. This Arizona is really booming. People are moving here all the time. You should come.
And that was 58 years ago, right?
Yep. And yeah. So my dad and his brother, or my dad and his father moved out here to Mesa, and my dad started plumbing, and it's still fun to drive down roads, and dad's like, that apartment complex, I did the plumbing on that, I dug right. trenches over there, and so yeah, and then eventually it kind of became a plumbing retail and then mm-hmm. wholesale thing, because you used to have to drive all the way to Phoenix to try to buy something,
right?
And so they were like, why don't we start selling something in Mesa,
right?
And so that's kind of how it started. And when I started 23 years ago, it was all Arizona family owned businesses mm-hmm. That did what we did, and
right.
there weren't any real chains that came from other states, and now there's really not any of us left.
Right. A lot of competition got rid of some of those smaller groups, but
exactly.
you guys have succeeded and were able to sustain and then be profitable enough to buy Benjamin when that opportunity came around. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was what we were so excited about, because Benjamin was our like a sister company to us. You know, I got to be friends with Mark, you know, him and I would talk about business and what we were excited about and proud of and what our struggles were and how to, you know, overcome those different things. And so it was really neat. Unfortunately, he passed away, and
right.
I got to work with his wife, who mm-hmm. I've since gotten to become friends with.
Right.
And so it's really neat to, you know, while it's really neat to that it has got to continue as an Arizona family-based business.
And kind of keep the same legacy. Nothing's really changed.
100%.
The service is still, you walk through the door, the service is impeccable.
Yeah, it's still run by the same woman who's been running it for a very long time, Juanita Machado, which she should be here, but she's even more press shy than anyone else could possibly be, but she's incredible.
Yeah, she did a great job last night as well. She's so personable. And everything. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, I'll be honest with you, I like nice things, and I wish my house was nicer. It is intimidating to walk into that store. There's so much in there and so many things. So tell us a little bit, if someone is a little bit hesitant maybe to step in because it's so overwhelming and so beautiful, they should still come down and talk to somebody, right?
That's exactly why you do come down and talk to somebody. I mean, at the end of the day, the internet is even more overwhelming. You know, I get it when you're like buying a sweater or a t-shirt and you buy it offline, but like, it's not that often that someone needs to buy plumbing products.
Right.
It's, you know, it just doesn't happen that often.
And you're going to live with it for a long time.
Exactly. And so like an internet review, even of something, doesn't make any sense because you're just like, well, was it an installer problem if you didn't like that faucet? Like, you know, it taste is so different, you know? So that's what's really fun about coming in and working with a true expert, because those people, again, I mean, one of them has been there for 25 years, you know, another 15 years, you know, so many of them have these great stories of like, hey, I don't sell that thing you're talking about because like, you know, this many plumbers have told me these things. So that's the whole point, is it's to come in and to kind of winnow it down and for someone to be like, hey, this is, you know, what it can fit as far as style and also price point, you know, because we kind of have to, you have to run the gamut of price points here.
That's the other thing that someone was telling me is you can't be intimidated because there's something for everybody. If you have an apartment and you needed to fix something and you wanted it to be nicer than the aluminum thing that you have on there, you have something for them. Even if they're going to leave the apartment in 2 or 3 years, it can be nice while they're there.
Exactly. Like that's the thing that is kind of cool about product right now, is that like there is such a plethora of things, you know, especially decoratively speaking, when, you know, 30 years ago, there were so few choices, you know, did you want it chrome or did you want it chrome? Right. You know, I mean, like, it's like, now I'm going, hey, this line here has 32 finishes. There's 6 versions of gold if you want, you know, which version of gold are you looking for? So it can feel intimidating because of all those options. But at the same time, if you're working with an expert who knows what they're talking about, they can walk you through it and walk you through the entire process.
That's the whole story, is that personalized service, and you name the product, you either have it or know where you can get it. Right?
100%.
Yeah. And like you say, it's the number one place in Arizona. So people from Phoenix and Flagstaff or Yuma are coming in all the time
to
get stuff because it's the only place they can get it.
Yeah.
With that knowledge and that specialty that you do, that's why it's been so successful over the years. What's the future look for? What are you thinking about doing?
Oh my gosh, we have a lot of things going on. We're so excited because the biggest thing is to remodel the space.
Right.
So the building is very, very old. It's, you know, it's been iconic, but it really hasn't had the opportunity, especially because there's been that giant road project that has been going on in front of it forever.
For 9 years, right? Yeah.
Yes. And as Mark used to say to me, he's like, yeah, but they've been talking about it since I was in high school.
Right.
So it's
been so close. It's got to be only about 7 years away. It's so
exactly,
close. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But once they get
that done, it'll be nice. Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm looking at it, I think this building is kind of be like the entrance to the warehouse district.
Right.
Really. It's just, so we're remodeling the building. And one of the big reasons that we're doing that is to go up into the tower. And so it's going to become a bathroom department store, if you will.
Very cool.
Because we're going to go up 3 of the floors. And, you know, and then my hope is, I'm really trying to talk to people because we're going to have some available rental space. And so I really would like it to become more of a design center. Because right now in Tucson, like, you kind of got to drive all over to kind of find stuff and to find that tile store and that lighting store and that cabinet company. And so it'd be really cool if we could create a space that you could come to and really design the rest of your home. So that's what we're looking forward to. And that's why we're adding decorative luxury appliances. So that's the big impetus for why we're remodeling, is to bring in brands like Sub-Zero Wolf, but also LG and GE and Samsung. are also going to be available in very short order.
That sounds exciting. Sounds like Benjamin Supply. Sounds like you've got job security, Aubrey Romero, for the next few years as you move through that that process.
Oh my gosh, she has a lot of work to do.
Yeah, Benjamin Supply Company celebrating 75 years. I can't leave you without asking you the last question is, how do you define success? Obviously 75 years and your family's 58 years. How do you define success?
Well, for me, it's odd because when it comes to our company, I feel like I'm a placeholder of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were brought up in the family business. And so success to me is sustainability.
Right.
And how can I pass this off to the next generation in my family?
Cool.
And
who knows,
improve
maybe,
upon it.
Maybe your niece will get into the company here.
Oh, she better. We had a conversation at dinner the other night at Bata. I was like, okay, ma'am, what are you up to?
That's great. Jeremy Smith, congratulations to you and your family and to all the employees of Benjamin Supply. 75 years. That's fantastic. Good luck to you.
Thank
Pleasure
you.
Meeting
really
you.
Really appreciate it.
You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. We'll be back with another guest on The Morning Voice. Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Voice on KVOI. You know, we have five hosts. On Monday, we have Lydia Randa, does Rainmakers for us, Ted Maxwell, General Ted Maxwell. On Tuesday, does Civic Engagement. On Wednesday, our good friend Grant Kruger from Union Public House and his enterprises does Food for Thought. On Thursday, Tom Moulton does Attractions and all the great things to do in Southern Arizona. And then on Fridays, we talk about success. We just had Benjamin Supply Company on, 75 years, and the Smith family.
What a story.
58 years with them up at Central, and then they bought Benjamin Supply. And what a great party last night celebrating the that. And then, you know, we talk about just good things. One thing I wanted to mention is we do have Thanksgiving boxes still for sale. We're sponsoring 150 boxes for schools in the southwest corner of Tucson, St. John's, Utterback, Santa Cruz, Apollo, Ochoa, Mission View Elementary Schools. And if you want to donate $45, I did the inventory last night. We have 107 boxes sold, so I need to still get 43 more boxes sold. So if you know somebody that would like a company that would like to buy 47 boxes, please let me know. Well, we'll get there. We'll get there before Thanksgiving. Speaking of success, we want to talk about The West, which is a wonderful establishment on the northeast side of Tucson. And our volunteer helper person, who is kind of one of the best ambassadors for The West, is Ann Pickering. Good morning to you, Ann.
Thank you for having me, Ed. Good morning to you.
A small world. I sat next to your husband at an event the other night, and we were talking about the West and what a great place it is and how you volunteer time, services, money, all the things that you guys do to support the West. So for people who don't know what the West is, tell us about this beautiful store. The best way to put it is in Whole Foods and the PetSmart shopping center up at the northeast corner of River and Craycroft, right?
Exactly, in the River Center. We have been in three different locations, but we've been there for quite a while. Mm-hmm. The West is a nonprofit gift shop, not a thrift shop, it's a gift shop, and we've been mm-hmm. in business for 54 years. We've given over $3 million to local Tucson area charities, mostly women and children's charities, mm-hmm. and we are a volunteer-run organization. We're very proud of what we do, and our shop is amazing. It's a one of a kind.
Mm, it is. I'm kind of a Mr. Card Giver kind of guy. You know, I'm still addicted to sending thank you cards and retirement cards and anniversary cards and those kinds of things. And so I'm forever looking for this the right card. Man, is it fun to go there?
Our shop is the place to come. Yeah. Yes, our gift. Buyers, we have gift buyers, card buyers, toy buyers, and needlework. And our card buyers are always looking for, we have a lot of local artists mm-hmm. now in the shop, and we want to promote Tucson. We have a lot of our shoppers come in and our snowbirds or visitors from out of town. They want to take things from Tucson. So mm-hmm. they buy cards, they buy gifts that are not always made in Tucson, but are Tucson focused.
Right.
And
there's even some food products too.
We have some food products, yes. Yeah. And
salsas and barbecue sauce, those kinds of things. Yeah.
Jams and jellies.
Yeah.
It's a great place. We like to, you know, we like to say that if you need something, you will find it at the West. I was just, when I was waiting to come in here to see you, Ed, I was out there reading some texts, and one of my girlfriends said, I hadn't been in the West in a long time, but I didn't find what I needed, but I came away buying 14 items and 5 raffle tickets. Right. So even if we didn't have exactly what she wanted, there were plenty of other things for her to find.
Right. What got you excited about being at the West and being its number one ambassador? And you're amazing how you are just so bubbly about, exciting about the West.
Well, thank you.
How did you stumble upon it? And all of a sudden, here you go.
One of my friends from another organization, from my PEO chapter, she invited me to come and work at the West. And I always
and
think...
And that's one of the unique things. All the people that work there are volunteers, right?
We are volunteers. And right. I think when you get a personal invitation from somebody that you... admire and care for and think is a good person, you say, well, if this is an organization, maybe I should look into. So I went into the West, and I had been shopping there before, but I went in with a different eye and saying, how could I help? And I think I've been there about 13 or 14 years volunteering. Yeah. We have people, we have one woman that at our general meeting next week is going to get a 30-year, we don't have pins or things like that, but a name tag that designates she's been 30 years.
I should buy her a card and hand it to her, yeah.
There you go. Her name is Marilyn Schubert, and she's going to be there, she has been there 30 years. Our volunteers are very loyal, and we really enjoy it. We're always looking for new volunteers, so please come into the West if you think that it might be a good fit for you.
And you don't have to work every day. You could work one day a week. You could work a couple of hours here and there.
Yeah. It's, you know, we like to say that we require 2 shifts a month, which is not very much. It's a 3-hour shift. And our hours are typically Monday through Saturday, 10 to 4, but during this holiday season, we're open on Sunday, and I have to give a plug to our newest neighbor at the River Center, which is Teaspoon.
Oh, yes.
It's a restaurant that just went in a few months ago. They are a fabulous helper to us. They're a fabulous help to us because they, when they have big crowds on Sundays, and we are now open on Sunday.
They wander over, huh?
They wander over because we're right next door to them.
Right.
And they've been very cooperative. And I think that's what a shopping center should be. I think we should all be helping each other out in the center.
Main Street USA is what shopping centers are. It's where all the people go, and that's where a good neighborly thing to do. So you have so many different kinds of gifts and things that people can buy, but needlework is also important too. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, the needlework is how we started out originally, and we are the only needlepoint store in Southern Arizona. If you are a needlepointer or countercross stitch, felter, we have the supplies for all those things, but our needlework supply for... needlepoint is amazing. We have canvases, I don't know how many different kinds of yarns and threads that we have, but we have somebody that staffs that section of the shop. So if you come in with a project and don't know quite how to do it, we also have classes in the back room. So we are your go-to place.
And some of that stuff comes back, really good stuff comes back for sale.
Yeah.
If someone donates, works on a project and gives it back and says, hey, I did this, and sell this and make some money for the West. So
We have lots of avenues to make money for the West. So we're also selling raffle tickets for the cars. We just have lots of different ways that you can help. But we'd love volunteers. We'd love people to come and shop. And... see what we're all about. I consider us kind of a best-kept secret of Tucson. Mm-hmm. We've been around a long time, 54 years, but people come in. All these people from Teaspoon particularly are new shoppers. They've never been in before, and they're like, wow, this is a great shop. I didn't know you existed.
Right.
So that's why I'm here today, trying to encourage people. Come in, see what we're all
about.
We
had you on several months ago. We'll keep you coming on because I think it's important for people to know about it, and it's important. And you know, We'll talk a little bit more after the break about what you have to offer and all the different things that people can experience there. But let's talk a little bit about the volunteers. You talk about people being there for 30 years and so forth. This is a great social outlet for people, but it's also a great way to give back in a it's not strenuous in any way.
Correct.
And it's very social.
Yes.
And fun.
Yes.
And if you like that kind of stuff, retailing and so forth, maybe you had a little experience about early on in your life and you want to come and share some of that. It's really good for the volunteers, isn't it?
It is. We have had the last couple of years, we've had a lot of volunteers come in and sign up to work with us. We've had couple of teachers that say, okay, I'm retired now, I have the time,
right.
I can do it. They don't want to stop working completely,
right.
But they need an outlet, they need something to do. And it doesn't matter what your walk of life was before, you have something that you can contribute to the West.
Right.
And if you love to visit with people, we are a great place to come.
And you can have three, four, five people in working in the store at the same time. There's kind of, I mean, I guess there's a limit of maybe 20 in there would be too many, but, so you can kind of pick the time you want to come in because you need coverage.
We have two distinct shifts. We have a morning shift and an afternoon shift of 3 hours each. Mm-hmm. And we have two people that work at the desk. And then we have two people or one person over in the needlework section.
Right.
But there's always buyers in the back room. And,
right.
There's quite a few of us that come in for projects that we're working on.
And helping stock and make the place look good and rearrange things. The people buy a bunch of their own thing. You got to move stuff around to make it look good and always keep an eye for merchandising and have that be a part of it. And that's kind of a fun thing to do too, especially if you like that kind of thing.
Exactly.
It's fun to do. And then, of course, you're raising money for charity. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that after the break. We're talking to Ann Pickering, who is with The West, a beautiful gift store at the northeast corner of River and Craycroft in the Whole Foods PetSmart River Center. You got to go see it. If you haven't seen it, you got to go there. We'll come back a little bit more about The West on The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. Matt, we've had fun this morning. We've talked about a business in business for 75 years, Benjamin Supply, and now we're talking about The West, which has been around for 54 years.
Yes.
Amazing.
It's a really interesting shop you've got. I mean, it's just a really neat place to stop in there, and you'll find things that you just won't find anywhere else.
It's cool. It's cool. I'm not a big shopper guy. Morgan and I went in there.
Yeah, I'm not coming out as a needlepoint guy.
Yeah.
there's just a lot of interesting stuff in there.
Yeah, Morgan and I were out there shopping it was a couple months ago when she and I were out there, and oh my goodness, we were having fun. It was kind of like being in a little Disneyland, and everything is unique and different. And of course, I was enamored by the cards. I think I bought 87 cards. But
I think I got 86 of them.
Yeah.
So thank you, Dr. Ackerley.
I have a little library of cards, and I got some of them from the West. So it's fun.
Oh, but a great, really neat place.
Great success. And I just want to thank you and your husband, Steve. This is Ann Pickering is with us from the West, and her husband, Steve, and I were at an event the other day. They're buying five boxes for the Thanksgiving box program. We're raising money to supply, I think we're in our eighth year now of supplying. We're up to 150 boxes that we give to six schools down in South Tucson. And my friend Sixto Molina, Jesse Lugo, Val Romero will be with us. Some of our friends will go over, and our good buddy from Tucson Appliance, Chris Edwards, has donated a truck, and we're going over on Wednesday morning to the Gap Ministries, pick up 150 boxes. It'll be six different pallets of boxes, and we're going to load them into a big truck, and then we go over to the schools, and we hand them out, and the schools decide which families need them the most, and we just drop them off, and then they distribute them to the families for Thanksgiving dinner. So I want to thank you and Steve for helping with that project. It's important, I think. Yeah,
you're very welcome.
It's been fun. We're talking with Ann Pickering, and she is the number one ambassador for The West, which is a wonderful gift store and card store and needlework and crafts up in Northeast Tucson at the corner of River and Craycroft in the River Center there. Beautiful, beautiful center there. Heck, you can go there and spend all day.
Yes, you can.
You can go have a coffee at the Whole Foods store. You can walk in and see some pets. You can, lots of different restaurants to look at. And then you can come over and spend a lot of money at the West. So talk a little bit more about what kinds of things, where you get the stuff. You said you have some local artists and so forth. So you keep mentioning, I think this is very unique, that you have buyers that are actually out there looking for cool things to put into the store. Are those volunteers too?
They are absolutely 100% volunteers. The buyers are very hardworking. They are amazing. They go to trade shows, and we have buyers for gifts, toys, paper goods, and multiple buyers for all the needlework supplies. So they are constantly meeting with a supplier at the shop, or they go to trade shows, or they're looking at catalogs, they're ordering, which is a constant. It's all year long. And when you're looking for right now, we have Christmas things out. They're ordering those things in February and March.
Right.
For the Christmas season.
And they're working on summer for next year already.
They are.
Probably.
Yeah. They are. Yeah. They work very diligently, and they find unique things that you're not going to find anywhere else. And especially over in the needlework section, that's an area where you need to kind of touch and feel. You know, it's you can't really look at and order things online. That's our biggest competitor, is online sales, as for any business right now. Yeah. But our shop, you're going to find things that you don't see anywhere else in Tucson, and you don't see them online. And you definitely can touch and feel when you're in our shop.
Yeah.
One of the things I forgot to mention, being a nonprofit, no sales tax. Super important, because at the end of the day, if you come in and shop with us, you walk away and the price you paid is what's on the tag.
Right. That's good. And also, you're also not only getting something cool, but you are supporting other charities Tucson. You've given away millions of dollars worth of money over the last 54 years. Just pick a couple. Obviously, Coaches for Charity today, but what are some of the groups that that have been supported by the West?
Gosh, we have...
Hundreds. It's hundreds.
It is. We're over 100 different charities through the years that we've given money to. We have a granting group, committee, that every year looks at... our members will nominate a charity to be selected to receive money. And our granting committee reviews what the grant is for, how much it's for, what amount of money we can give that year. So some of them, we've done Sister Jose's.
All right.
We've done, one of the ones I like is the Southern Arizona Children's Advocacy.
Right.
And they just
Miss Fortney and Mr. Michaels, I'm having lunch with Alan in a couple of days. Yeah, they do a great job, and those kind of things. So you're basically focused on women and children.
We are.
Families aren't important, and men are also important, but the kind of the focus on most of those is women and children.
So. One of the charities that we've given to in the last several years, and perhaps will continue, I'm not on the committee this year, so I don't know, is Wheels for Kids. It's focused out of Oro Valley, and it's 100% volunteers. And that does give bicycles and helmets and locks that go with a bicycle to all ages, men or women, children. They are a phenomenal group. But there are people that need to get to work, don't have a car.
Right.
They need a bicycle. And that's one of the groups that will provide for particularly young men that need bicycles.
So if you haven't been to the West, you need to go to the West at the corner of River and Craycroft, northeast corner in the Whole Foods PetSmart River Center, it's called. You got to go there. It's a great place. And thank you for what you and your husband do for Tucson and all the great support you give the West.
Thank you, Ed. I appreciate you having me on again.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks to you.
You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. This is Wonder on a Friday morning, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. Matt, I think it was kind of interesting when I went to the Benjamin Supply event last night, the same thing happened. People knew that I was ran for mayor a couple of times, and they came up to me and told me all the things that were wrong with the city of Tucson. And then I told them the story about the Morning Voice, about how we talk about the good things going on in Tucson. And it was kind of eye-opening to hear some of those people say, oh, here's the reason why I love Tucson, and here's why I love the University of Arizona. And that's part of what the Morning Voice is, to talk about the good things going on.
Well, Ed, and this is what I love about this show. And the first thing we learned about Benjamin Plumbing Supply, you learn about your neighbors, you learn about businesses that you drive by every day,
right?
You learn all the stories behind them. That's what I love about the story. Just first hour is great, and I know you got stuff to do this hour. So
yeah, we got Wonder going on, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. And we had Melody Buckner here a couple of weeks ago, and I made the terrible mistake of saying, if you know of anybody else that wants to come on the show, and she said, do I have the guys for you? And so they're here today. Alex Alejandro Gonzalez, good morning to you, Alex.
Good morning.
And Kyle. Kyle. Hi. Arthur, good morning to you.
Thanks for having
me. And Gerald Zivic, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So you guys are all in the University Center for Assessment, Teaching, and Technology, UCAT, as it's referred to on campus. A couple of you are learning designers, and you're a lead learning designer. What the heck is a learning designer? Let's start with Alex, since you're the lead. Let's talk about what a learning designer does.
So I'll describe our team in general and give them a little bit to talk about as well. So our team at UCAT is called the Creative Curriculum Team, and our working titles are learning designers, which is pretty broad because the scope of our work is really dedicated to enhancing the student experience and bolstering their career prospects after they leave campus, which is to say increase digital literacy.
Mm-hmm.
So we're also the owners of the Adobe Creative Cloud contract. And that's our general...
Thank you, by the way. Thank you. I have one of those contracts, so thank you.
Extremely useful.
Yes.
Super fun tool. Not the only tool out there, but that's the one we choose.
Mm-hmm.
And so we dedicate a lot of time to helping campus use it effectively, have it have a presence in classrooms,
mm-hmm.
try and help instructors engage their students in different ways. Maybe your 5-paragraph essay could mm-hmm. be a podcast. Maybe
right.
your presentation could be a mini documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could put your syllabus into a live syllabus on a website instead. Anything to increase engagement, increase digital literacy, understand how media is made so that we're consuming it, but we're critiquing it and we're creating it. I mean, more than ever, we need to have that kind of
right.
awareness. And we approach this through general support, consultations, classroom visits, custom resources, and an institute. And I'm going to stop talking there so that they can share some things too.
So let's talk, Gerald. This is about turning teaching ideas into reality. So if you have an instructor that has kind of what Alex was talking about, maybe a different way of presenting something or a more engaging way of presenting something, you guys come up or help come up with a way to deliver that.
Yeah, we provide lots of different alternatives to traditional sort of methodology. So rather than being papers, we try to encourage other ways mm-hmm. or other ways that people can share information, whether it's something that's visual, something that's spoken, just other opportunities for people that maybe communicate better in other alternative ways rather than traditional.
So right. I'm kind of a case study for this. I've been teaching at the U of A for 35 years, and I remember back, oh, good 15, 20 years ago, especially in the summer program, which was all online at the time, which was kind of new in its own right to be all online. And we would give these textbook quizzes that, you know, basically what we were teaching students to do was to go online and find the answer somewhere and fill in the test answers. We just realized that that was not the best way to go about teaching. So we worked with you guys and had students come up with little videos of here's what I've learned and here's what I need to know. And that's a real important thing, right? To help design, help teachers kind of come up with a way to let students express themselves other than filling in multiple choice answers.
For sure. I think that oftentimes instructors will come to us with just an idea, and that's
right.
what UCAT's idea behind that phrase is. Instructors will come to us with just an idea, and it's our job to make that idea
right.
reality. And this partnership allows us to not have instructors need to be the content experts and the technology mm-hmm. experts. Mm-hmm. They can focus on just their curriculum, and then we'll come in and help with the technology.
And I think that's important because, you know, having done the same thing the same way for so many years, you know, there's one class that I have taught literally for 35 years, every semester for 35 years. And to be quite honest with you, it's pretty much by rote. I walk in, I throw up a slide deck, and I go in and talk forever. We've enhanced it with applied learning and so forth. But in today's world, you just can't do that lectures format anymore. That's not the way that kids learn anymore. So you would help a guy like me as a teacher to enhance the delivery of the curriculum, but also have the students engage in that process as well.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We all were high school teachers for, mm-hmm. you know, 12, 13 years. I don't know what each of us, but around that. And we taught together. And when I started working here, I had the opportunity to build my team, and I asked them to apply. So it worked out really well. But 2 weeks before they started, we were running our first Adobe Digital Learning Institute, which was 2 weeks of diving into 6 different applications, 4 different modalities with 15 faculty. Wow. And we were really intimidated because, you know, we were just high school teachers.
Right.
We have our masters, but our realm was high schoolers. And I think the biggest takeaway was that people like being taught like high schoolers. They like being engaged. They like having resources. They like having fun. And over again, and in these institutes, the faculty that are with us, they tell us that their favorite part is not only what they learned, but how we taught it. Right. So there's just a lot to say for engagement.
Right,
and
right.
it's also hard to let go, you know, 35 years of doing the same thing, it's hard to let go of our habits.
Right, right.
Yes. Our comforts.
We're talking to Alex Gonzalez, Kyle Arthur, and Gerald Zivick of the University of Arizona Center for Assessment, Teaching, and Technology. We call it UCAT. And Wonder is sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant and Hughes Federal Credit Union on The Morning Voice. I just have to say, as an interesting little perspective, I went to Caruso's, of all places, one of our sponsors, with a group of students the other day. And Jack and Audrey said this, that I'm a big, you know, don't be on your computer while there's a guest speaker and you're, you know, looking up the sports score, or you're engaging in something other than really paying attention. And, you know, I've been harping on that for 20 years about, you know, you need to have 100% engagement. And they gave me an interesting perspective, which I think is, you as high school students, teachers of high school students, you probably got this a lot too. We started them out on Chromebooks as little guys, and they're on their computers during class the whole time. Then we get them to high school, and they're really not paying attention, and they're really looking at their phones full time and on their computers full time. Then we send them to the U of A, and we put them in Centennial Hall with 2,500 other people, and they're sitting there, and they're just, you know, they're bored out of their mind, and so they look at their computers. Then they get over to Eller, and they're in a class like mine, which is, you know, 30, 50 kids, and I'm really tough on them and so forth, and I tell them not to look at their computers. They've been looking at their computers for 15, 16 years, and yet I'm telling them not to do that. And so what you guys help us do is to realign what we're thinking and have them be on their computers and help us with the curriculum. So that's kind of an interesting perspective, I thought.
It's pretty accurate. I think, honestly, more so now than ever, more of our communication, you're talking about marketing and things like that, that's how they communicate. This generation is definitely more heavily focused on communication through different applications and things like that. So it's how are we communicating now is slightly different. And obviously, we're just trying to keep up with what's going on in the world itself. So like when we're teaching all these different skills with the Adobe products, really what we're doing is we're just trying to meet them in the middle and give them the best tools as they move forward. And when they leave, it's like, what do you actually need to succeed this day and age?
Right. You got to jump into a job where that's all they're doing full time is working on their computer. How does AI fit into this? And how do you, you know, because students are obviously answering papers and assignments and so forth. I saw one young lady sitting in my class and she was doing her resume and she was simply asking the chat to tell her what to put in there, and she just cut and pasted, and her resume was 100% generated, not through her own thoughts per se, by whatever the machine told her. That's a good thing. That's a really good thing. That's a really fast thing. That's a very expeditious thing. But how do you incorporate that into your design when you're looking at design?
Sure. So Adobe has its own set of AI tools that are text to image based AI graphics, images,
awesome,
which are all really
incredible.
Really exciting, changing really quickly. We're all just trying to keep up, but kind of our take on AI is similar to what you were just saying, where instructors, just because we've done it this way for so long, doesn't mean that's still the best way to do it, right? And technology is changing, and students want to be involved in that, right? And so a lot of instructors that we work with are nervous about AI. And for us, fortunately, all of the AI tools that are created are just visually really interesting.
Right.
And it's not going away.
No.
It's not going to disappear. So fighting it, that's a losing battle. So we're trying to encourage instructors to, as we're shifting toward creative projects, think about how AI can benefit students in a way that maybe is a jumping off point for a bigger project. How can they use it to enhance their learning and not replace their learning? It's not for cheating. It's a tool.
Right. Great. We'll come back after the break. We're talking with, that was Kyle Arthur, who you just heard, and Alex Gonzalez and Gerald Zivick of the University of Arizona Center for Assessment, Teaching, and Technology. We'll come back after the break and talk about design and how they might take Ed Ackerley's 4 classes at the University of Arizona and make them better. This is Wonder. It's sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant and Hughes Federal Credit Union, and you're listening to The Morning Voice. Teacher, welcome back to The Morning Voice. We're with Alex Gonzalez, Kyle Arthur, and Gerald Zivick of the University of Arizona Center for Assessment, Teaching, and Technology, which is kind of an interesting name, UCAT we call it. Wonder is sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant and Hughes Federal Credit Union. You guys are really designers by trade, and so a guy like me who's teaching a class for 35 years sits back and has a box of red wine and thinking about, I'll go down to Caruso's and have a little glass of wine, but just wondering how can I switch from disengagement? And what I mean by that is people in our classes using technology to kind of exit the realm of learning. And how do we engage them? I know President Robbins, when he was there, and even before him, the presidents before, had this phrase, 100% engagement. And they were trying to see, how do we get the students to engage in the process? And by extension, how do you get the teachers, the instructors, to be more inclusive and engaging with the students? And so, I'm case study. I'm going to give you guys a challenge. I have a little applied advertising class, been teaching it for 35 years. It's a lecture-based teaching. They have to learn the language of advertising. It's kind of like a specialty within marketing, so they have to know the vernacular and learn how to talk about advertising and what it all means, but also at the same time, they have to be creative and come up with an applied a case study for a client. And this year we're doing it, this semester we're doing it for Basecamp International for veterans. And so if I had invited you into my classroom, how would you begin the process of ascertaining how you might help me? Do I come up with the ideas, or do you come and visit and you guys help come up with the ideas? Or how would start with you, Alex? How would you want to do that?
So we kind of meet people where they are, and also so some instructors will come to us and say, I want to do a podcast. Can you help me? We're like, sure.
I see. So they already know where they want to be, kind of. Yeah.
Sometimes they'll say, I have this assignment that it's just falling flat and I want to make it more engaging, and we'll come and chat with them about it. But what we start with is, what are your learning outcomes, right? Mm-hmm. Which are those marketing terminologies.
Right.
And the case study for their customer.
Right.
Forgot
right.
the word client.
Uh-huh.
And we think about ways to kind of engage with that. Is it assigning students their own expertise and having them create a video, a podcast, an infographic about it, something with creative problem solving and a kind of different kind of accountability, right? Something that they know that not only will their instructor see, but their classmates. Mm-hmm. and hopefully maybe they'll want to show their friends and family too.
Put it in a portfolio when they go for a job interview. So yeah. Here's something I put together. Yeah.
So we think about like those elements because that's what we love to see. Like we saw it with our own participants where they would say, oh, look, I texted my wife the video we made yesterday. Mm-hmm. So just that. I feel like
ownership.
Accomplishment, ownership. Yeah.
So I don't know why I'm picking on you, Kyle. Not like you're the exam expert or anything like that. But you know, I do have a problem with putting out exams that are by rote. And one of the problems I see that I have is when we have them do a little video or something like that. How do you judge it? How do you judge that they've achieve the learning outcome. So if you were to say one of the suggestions you gave to me would be to do a little video, how would I grade that as an instructor? Like I would be able to do on a multiple choice test. I got a percentage, boom, done, out of here. So it's really easy. I have to work a little harder probably, huh?
Sure. Yeah, and I would say it might be a little bit more work for you, but I think that maybe watching student videos might be a more enjoyable thing to grade than grading papers. I think
the one thing I will say there is if I can get a group of four to do it, that cuts down my grading by 3/4.
Sure,
exactly. And so instead of doing 100 tests to grade, I'm only grading 25, which does actually reduce my time a little bit, and I can spend more quality time with one output.
Yeah, and what you need to think about is what are the learning outcomes you hope students leave your class with? What do you hope students learn and what is important to you that when they move past your class, they bring with them? And I think the video, when you're grading a video as opposed to assignment, you're looking for learning outcomes. Everybody's going to have different skills. Some right. of these digital natives like are born with the ability to edit videos. Others are going to struggle with it. And I think that these secondary and tertiary skills like video editing and video making maybe aren't as important to grade as the actual content of your class.
What is the creative output that you're getting? Speaking of skills, your grandfather, Gerald, was a good friend of the family. I knew your mom, your grandma and grandpa for many years at our church, and a great artist that your grandfather was, and your dad played football with me at Palo Verde High School, and then he went on to the U of A with a great career at the U of A, and a good guy working at Raytheon, so doing his thing. And then you come along and become a high school teacher. But outcomes, that's what this is all about, right? How do we enhance the learning experience of the student and get them prepared like you for the future? And what your dad, mom, and your grandma and grandpa put together, and look at you now, you're at the U of A doing design work. That's important that we launch them into the future, right?
Yeah, that's kind of the goal, is preparing everybody to have a skill set that's usable and I think more so in demand. And it kind of rounds out a lot of the things we were talking about, was not only are we trying to give them those skills, but we're talking about AI and all these other things. So it's like, how do we use those things to communicate? And I think the thing is, when you find the right channel or the right way for each person to communicate, because everybody's is a little bit different. So when you create those projects, you're trying to make sure that we're embracing sort of some of the skill sets and the natural abilities that they have. And I think, like you said, they take ownership and they actually take things a lot further when we find something that they want to be, or something that they are interested in. So we're talking about the engagement of it. And when you find that thing, all of a sudden, it's a lot less of you pushing something as much as them trying to figure it out and do it themselves. And they sort of take ownership of what they're creating. They actually put in more effort, I think, is what I find in the long term as far as the outcome. So
great. That's great. And Alex, if someone wanted to, we do have professors from the U of A listen to the show. If someone wanted to get in touch with you, how would they, obviously look up UCAT, but how would they get in touch with you guys?
So the fastest way is just to email our team inbox, adobecc@arizona.edu. You can also find us on our website, adobe.arizona.edu.
We want to thank Melanie Buckner, your boss, who
Melody.
Made you guys come here today and talk to me. But she was wonderful. She is wonderful. And she said you guys would have a great story, and you do. I'm going to give you a challenge. I need to be a better instructor. I need to be a better faculty member. I need to engage my students in a better way. I'd like to invite you into one of my classrooms, and we'll talk about the outcomes of what we might be able to do to make it exciting and fun and have the kids have that 100% engagement. So let's get that done. And
we'd love that.
Love to do that in the spring if we could. So
absolutely.
Great. Our guests this morning are Alex Gonzalez, Kyle Arthur, and Gerald Zivick of the University of Arizona Center for Assessment, Teaching, and Technology. Wonder is sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant on 4th Avenue and Hughes Federal Credit Union. We have great stories about great things going on at the University of Arizona. We call it Wonder. What's one thing that you think is full of wonder at the U of A?
I think every semester we see students when they're given the creative tools and the creative freedom to create, everything that comes out of them is filled with wonder. So our students are.
That's a great way to end Wonder on Morning Voice. Thank you all for being here this morning, and I look forward to working with you in the spring.
Okay. We do too. Thank
Looking
you so
forward
much.
To it.
Thank you.
We'll be back with Old Pueblo Trolley, service to the University of Arizona, in just a few seconds here after words from our great sponsors. You're listening to The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm Dr. Ed Ackerley. What a great show so far today on this Friday. We've had Benjamin Supply Company, 75 years. We had the West, 54 years. We have the University of Arizona, 146 years. And now we have the Old Pueblo Trolley celebrating 50 years of SunTran and 100 years of bus service tomorrow. The Old Pueblo Trolley Transit Museum. And our guest this morning is Tyler Johnson. Good morning to you, Tyler.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. Tyler, for listeners who may not be familiar, what is Old Pueblo Trolley and the museum, and what is its role in playing a role in preserving Tucson's transportation history?
So Old Pueblo Trolley starts way back in the 80s. For a long time Tucson residents, you may remember us as the ones that ran heritage streetcars on 4th Avenue and University.
Yes.
Ever since the modern Sunlink came in, our goals have shifted. So now we preserve buses and streetcars that are relevant to Southern Arizona history.
That's great. One of my good friends actually worked for us for about a year. A good friend of mine was Roy Lawis, the fourth city councilman, and his grandfather was the one that had the Laos Transit System here for many years. Old Pueblo Transit, I think it was called at one time.
Yep.
And obviously there is a Roy Lawis hub of the SunTran downtown, and that's named after the Laos family. And buses and transportation have been an important part of moving people around in Tucson for years here in Tucson. That's what the museum is looking at, right, is preserving that history.
That is correct, yes.
And tomorrow you have an event. You have a celebration tomorrow between 10 and 3, 50 years of SunTran. So SunTran is our public busing system that everyone sees going down the street. But there's 50 years before that, there was as Old Pueblo Transit System and some other bus service. So it's a celebration tomorrow of the history, and people can come down and see some of these buses, right?
Yeah, all for free.
Right, which is nice. That's nice. So where are you located? Where is the museum?
We are located in South Tucson on the corner of 36th and South 4th Avenue, about where the old Tucson Greyhound Park used to be.
Oh, right, yeah. And you can kind of see the buses. There's a fence around it, but you can kind of see the bus stops, so you kind of see exactly where it is when you drive by it. So it's important, you know, SunTran in and of itself, of course, lately. SunTran's been in a lot of news lately with political stuff and just the state of our social world and so forth in Tucson. But SunTran's played an important role in moving people around Tucson. And so what is some of the significance of commemorating these two anniversaries, 50 years of SunTran and 100 years of bus service? Obviously, those are sentinel years and important milestones. Why is that important? Why should a Tucsonan care about commemorating the history of these services?
The way I see it, just one of our buses in our collection has probably impacted more Tucsonans than an entire museum full of automobiles. That's the way I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
They are an essential link for getting people to and from work and home and play. And I feel like people should take a little bit more interest in what makes the city tick and what makes everything work.
Right. Point of personal privilege, when I was a young boy, 50 years ago. Bill and I and a couple of our buddies would, during the summer, would hop on a bus and take it to the end and turn around and come back and just do it for fun, just to go see the city. And, you know, it cost you 25 cents or whatever it did at the time. And it was fun just to do that a couple of times to see where the buses go. And as a little guy, you know, we were probably 10, 12, 13 years old at the time, to run around and see what's going on. But so many people have used SunTran. I know a lot of friends who went to South Point. They lived on the east side, and they'd hop on the bus and get to high school. And you still see that where people are jumping on the buses to get to school and to doctor's appointments and so forth. So when you have a large metropolitan area like Tucson, where we're very car-centric, or in the sense that we have a lot of acreage and blocks and city blocks and a lot of urban areas and so forth, but also lots of suburban areas, busing has been an important part of moving people around in Tucson. And that's kind of what the buses that you have there are commemorating, probably each decade from that time, right?
Yes, absolutely. We have one of every SunTran bus since they started in 1975.
How did you acquire those? How did you guys? I mean, obviously you're a nonprofit, but how do you get a hold of a bus when, like, if it goes out of service? Do you have to buy it from SunTran, or how do you get it?
We have a standing agreement with SunTran. Whenever they retire a model of bus, they donate one over to us and associated parts as well.
Yeah. How much room do you have? I mean, you're pretty crammed in there with as many buses as you have. You need some more space probably, but how many more buses can you fit in there?
I'm going to restrain myself. None. We don't need any more right now.
Right.
We need to focus on what we have.
We were trying to give you a couple of double-deckers, and Carl, is that his name? What was the Mr.? Yeah, Kaywood. Yeah, no, please. We don't need your buses. We've got all these buses here, and it's great.
And yet, we can always make an excuse if it's a unique bus.
Yeah. And those come few and far between. The unique ones become few and far between.
Yes.
Do you refurbish the buses then and bring them up to museum quality, or do you kind of leave them as is? Or so if we're looking at a bus, say from 1920, what does it look like? And it's pretty old.
Yeah. I can give you a specific example. We have a bus from 1928. It ran in Bisbee in Southeast Arizona. And when it was retired, it sat on a farm for 30, 40, 50 years, and it just rotted.
Right.
There was nothing left of it. It looked like a shell.
Yeah.
And even despite that, we do the best we can with original parts. If we don't have original parts, we have to make our own sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And restoration does include going over every nut and bolt and every part of the engine, every part of the interior, every part of the exterior, and trying to get it to look as pretty as possible.
How did you get interested in being part of the museum and looking at transit and fixing buses and being the guy that helps build a part if you need it and refurbishing? How'd you get excited about it?
So for those who are listening, I'm only 31. I'm still kind of young at this. In my 20s, I still hadn't figured out what I wanted to do. After COVID, I took a trip abroad to the UK, found my passion, which was history. They do a great job of historical preservation over there. And I said, wow, when I come back to Tucson, I want to do something just like that. I discovered Old Pueblo Trolley just accidentally. They used to be on 4th Avenue behind O'Malley's Bar.
Right, I remember that, yeah.
And I said, whatever happened to those guys? So I did a little bit of research and I was hooked.
Right. And so you've been helping out ever since. And they have built the bus fleet of to represent basically every one of the decades of the 100 years of bus service. You have a bus that's representing that. And people can come see that tomorrow. You've got lots of things going on. Tell us a little bit about the lectures. You're going to do some instruction about the history of buses. You have a session at 11:30 and a session at 1:30. So tell us a little bit about who's going to be doing those and what are you going to be talking about?
Okay. We brought up Mr. Kaywood, Gene Kaywood, earlier. He is my mentor. He is the current president and founder of Old Pueblo Trolley. Buses are his passion. That man knows more about Tucson public transportation history than anyone else I know.
Right.
He's the one giving the lecture, and it's going to be a short history about those 100 years, about how buses were established here in Tucson, and then the ups and downs through World War II, and the decline during the 50s and 60s, the rise of SunTran, and everything since.
Right, right. And even now, there's obviously some political and some social stuff going on and on buses now, but buses still remain an important part of moving people around. And of course, the county and the city have agreements, and SunTran is an important part of transportation for so many people that live in Tucson, and their service even up into Marana and down into Sarita and so forth, and out at way far east. So it's not just Tucson-centric. They're really moving people around in so many different areas, and that's important. You also got some other fun things happening tomorrow. You got some vendors, some DJ, you got some tours and some food. So what kind of food will be there? Buses, right?
Well, there's an idea for you. Yeah, hey, those double-decker buses, there's an idea for
there
you.
There you go.
Yeah. But we looked around the immediate South Tucson area, and we found a couple of local establishments that serve Mexican food, and so we are excited to have them there. Luna's Kitchen, ever heard of them.
Wonderful, wonderful, yeah. And you said you've got a couple of vendors, and those people are going to be there. No table fees, just come and call Tyler and be there. But who do you got coming out? What kind of groups are going to be there with their tables?
A lot of other historical nonprofits and museums. So I can think of the Tucson Auto Museum, all right. Rolling Through Time Auto Museum, the mm-hmm. Ignite Neon Sign Museum. A lot of these have local connections to Tucson, right. And transportation or just local history. Mm-hmm. And those are the kind of people we want to work with in the future, and we'd love to have them aboard.
Great. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back to talk about Old Pueblo Trolley Transit Museum. They got an open house tomorrow, free admission, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., 50 years of SunTran and 100 years of bus service. They're located at 250 East 36th Street in South Tucson. You can't miss it if you get down there, kind of near the old Greyhound bus station. It's over there. It's pretty obvious once you get close because you can see all the buses. And we'll come back and talk a little bit more about the Old Pueblo Trolley Museum. And our guest is Tyler. And Tyler is an expert, if you will, on museums because he's 31 years old and he knows all there is to know about buses. So you're listening to The Morning Voice. We'll be back after the break.
Come on, Dr. Ed. Ain't that right?
Amen. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. This is a wonderful Friday morning. Hey, we're getting close to Thanksgiving, and we'd like to have you to consider donating $45 to provide a Thanksgiving box to a family in need. We have 6 elementary schools and middle schools on the southwest corner of Tucson, kind of where the old Pueblo Trolley Museum, Transit Museum is. Santa Cruz School, St. John's, Utterback, Apollo, Ochoa, and Mission View Elementary Schools. The idea behind this is that we sponsor boxes. We deliver 25 in big crates to each. We take a pallet full to each of the 6 schools, and we have Gap Ministries, Chef John Hone, who is... His culinary team is preparing the boxes. They'll have them all ready for us on Wednesday morning before Thanksgiving. And then Val Romero, Sixto Molina, Jesse Lugo, myself, and some other volunteers will be there to pick them up in a truck donated by Chris Edwards at Tucson Appliance. And we're going to take them to the 6 schools. And the principals and their social workers have decided who the 25 recipients will be. And we drop them off, and then they distribute them to the families. And it's a good deal. Our good friend Richard Fimbres, who was a former city council member, was the person who got me involved in this about 8 or 9 years ago. And he's retired now from the city council, but Coaches for Charity has kept this going. And we're up to 150 families, and a pretty significant contribution. We want to thank John Hone and all the people who have donated so far. We're up to 112 now that Dan and Steve Pickering just bought 5 boxes. We're up to 112. I need to do 150. So if you have a chance and you want to sponsor a box, you can go to coachesforcharity.org, and you can get the donation button there and get those. And we're looking for a few more helpers to help us get that done. And if you'd like to volunteer and come with us as we distribute, give me a call. We'll let you know where you can meet us. We're talking about this morning Wonder, the good things going at the University of Arizona. University of Arizona is a historic place, a really important part of the Old Pueblo. And so is the Old Pueblo Trolley Transit Museum. And our guest this morning is Tyler Johnson, who is a volunteer there and has just on fire for transit museums and history and a way to preserve history. So good morning again to you, Tyler.
Yeah, good morning.
So you have an open house tomorrow at the Old Pueblo Trolley Museum. It starts at 10 a.m., goes to 3 p.m. There's some lectures by Gene Kaywood at 11:30 and 1:30 to talk about the history of 50 years of SunTrend and 100 years of bus service. You've got some vendors who will have tables with information. You've got a DJ. You've got some food from Luna Soul Cafe, and you've got some tours going on. Action-packed day tomorrow at the museum. So we invite everybody to come out and see that, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, you've had a good relationship with SunTran. They've been helpful in the last 50 years of helping you. The museum hasn't been around that long, but they have helped you get a replica or an actual bus from the era that in those 50 years. So you have one of each kind of bus that has come out, and you get first refusal for it, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and the SunTran buses probably come in pretty good shape, but you've had some real tough ones to redo, and so part of what your volunteers do is spend the time, effort, money, and the thinking power to what are you going to do to make this bus run again and make it look good. It's kind of fun, isn't it?
Oh, it's a puzzle. Every time you think you've mastered one thing, oh, there's one little thing we completely forgot. We have to stop everything and do that first.
Right. And sometimes you got to, you know, some of the interiors of some of them are pretty much gone, and you got to reconstruct seats and cushions and whatever you would have to use. And in the modern, there's no seat belts on buses anymore. There still isn't on seat belts, are there?
Never was.
I never was. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I guess they're so big that if they hit something, that the other thing's going to move, not the bus.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit about your history and how you went to England and this was kind of interesting to you. You're always looking for volunteers, right? So there might be somebody else out there that comes tomorrow that really didn't have a hankering for buses and transit, but they might catch the bug like you did. So you're inviting everybody to come out and see what's going on.
That's exactly right. That's one of our biggest things we need to do is get more volunteers.
Right. And all the groups and companies that have helped you over the years to be a viable charity. I know Mr. Kaywood and the volunteers down there, they spend a lot of time and effort and their own personal money to try and keep things afloat down there. But they're also having fun, aren't they?
Yeah, you kind of have to down there when you're underneath a bus working on its mechanicals or suspension. You got to look at the bright side of things.
Yeah. Are there any actual trolleys that you have, or are they all buses?
We do have streetcars, heritage streetcars. So if the ones that ran in the 90s and 2000s on 4th Avenue, we still have all of them.
Right.
And we still take as good care of them as we can. They don't have anywhere to run, but
they couldn't run down the Sunlink line then, right? They're different,
no.
Different sizes and different kind of electrical mechanics or whatever, right?
Correct, different voltage specifically.
Right, right. Okay, so tomorrow, Old Pueblo Trolley Transit Museum, open house, 10 to 3, 250 East 36th Street. You can go online to oldpuebloTrolley.com and get the information that you need. Tyler, it's been fun talking to you this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I hope the Old Pueblo Trolley Museum keeps rolling along.
Absolutely, and I hope to see you and many of your listeners there tomorrow as well.
Okay, great. Thanks, Tyler. You're listening to The Morning Voice, where we talk about the good things going on in Tucson. Wonder is sponsored by Cruz's Italian Restaurant and Hughes Federal Credit Union. Coming up on Monday, Lydia Ronda with Rainmakers. Matt, have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. This is The Morning Voice on KVOI.